To accept the things I can change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this restroom behind me and the, I'm sorry, the use this room and the restrooms behind me exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in the first 30 days of sobriety? Anyone on Zoom? You can chat with our group member. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. The group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we'll be discussing step three. Please welcome our panel this evening, Lynn and Taylor. I'll read the first paragraph on page 60, and then the panel will share for a few minutes for each reading. Let's get started. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Page 60, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter of the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after made clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we are alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could ever leave their alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if you were. Lynn, you want to go first?
Sure. Hey, everybody. I'm Lynn, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lynn.
And, this is a perfect place for me just to qualify for a little bit. I just tell you my sobriety date, home group, and I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, have not had a drink or a drug since, and May 30th, 1995. And that my home group is the Saturday morning brunch bunch that meets at 9:30 a.m. every Saturday morning. And boy, was I a mess when I got here. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I called up AA and I asked them for help. And this back when, for the millennials, you know, we used to have telephone books. Looked it up and the AA used to be in telephone book. And so I called up AA and somebody from the clubhouse there in Hilton Head, South Carolina, answered the phone. And they told me when the next meeting was. And I'm trying to remember. It was like 4 or 6 hours from now. And you know what? I'm not going to make it. And I just knew that I wasn't going to make it. That if I had to wait that long, I was going to go to the liquor store. I was going to get drunk or more drunk. I was already drunk. It had been about 4 or 6 hours since my last drink. And I did not know how to not drink at that point. And So I got here as a result of a 12-step call. They brought me an AA big book. Three people came over to my house. They did the deal. I just love it. And they carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to me. I have no idea what they said. I was drunk. Like I said, by my standards, I was sober, but by all standards in the world, I was drunk. I was still drunk. And the thing is that for some reason or other, I couldn't understand why these people are sitting there talking about themselves, because I'm why they're there. You know, why aren't they asking me questions about me? So, you know, I'm definitely an alcoholic. I qualify in every aspect of being an alcoholic. And, you know, when we start talking about step three, I just think about my selfishness and self-centeredness and trying to find God's will. And I'm like, boy, do I qualify. You know, so even though I've been here for a while, you know, back in 95, you know, we didn't have cell phones at meetings and stuff like that. So it's been a long time ago. And, but when he reads this part, when it says, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, I think to myself, I go, you know, I so related to that. Not that I thought I was an alcoholic. I wasn't quite convinced of that. I just knew that my life had never, ever been manageable. I could connect to the fact that my life had never, ever been manageable. And then when I got to the part about the human power could have relieved our alcoholism, I was like, yeah, whatever, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I didn't spend any time pondering higher powers or anything like that. It's just that I was exhausted and desperate. That's it. And when it goes to the C part, that God could and would if he were sought. And once again, that's Charlie Brown's teacher at the front of the room going, wah, 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 wah. You know, it's just, you know, there was no God in my life. I had no desire to have God in my life. But if you guys were to talk about it, I was just going to nod my head, you know. I love how Bill Wilson had this huge spiritual experience, had this huge white light. He was just filled with, you know, God's love and, you know, and he felt it right away. That wasn't my experience. I came in just saying, well, I hope nobody talks to me about God, you know, and that was it. So, but I had enough exhaustion and I had enough desperation that I was ready to go ahead and fake it. So I was ready for step three. And I'm going to go ahead and pass to my buddy, Taylor.
I'm Taylor. I'm an alcoholic. So just to qualify as well, my sobriety date is August 22nd, 2022. So, you know, just over a year. I definitely meet the standards of an alcoholic. You know, I drank not just to get drunk, but to numb something out. That was always my method of dealing with things, was to drink until it was gone, essentially. You know, I'm a binge drinker. I didn't have to drink every day, but when I was drinking for a long time. You know, I don't know how many I needed to drink to get there, but I was going to get there regardless. There was all sorts of indications throughout my drinking career from a very early age. I started drinking whenever I was 14 years old, and, you know, I started blacking out pretty quickly. I didn't always black out, but, you know, majority of the time, half the time I did. You know, I can't tell you that something bad happened every time I drank, but certainly when something bad happened, I was drunk, you know, and those were, you know, pretty frequent throughout my life. But like most good alcoholics, you know, I refuse to see the flashing lights. You know, I refuse to acknowledge what God was trying to tell me. You know, I experienced things in my early life that put me at odds with God. It's not that I didn't believe in him, it's just that he did these things to me. So how could I surrender myself to somebody that was, or something that was going to put me through this hardship? So I was shaking my fists from a very early age. You know, is that all you got? Like Lieutenant Dan up on the mast, you know, the Forrest Gump movie, you know? But, you know, as time went on, I learned that was not all he had. He had much more. And that was going to be something that he was going to bring me to, that was going to break me. And so that's how it went. 20 years later, and I'm 34 years old, and I experienced this cataclysmic event that takes me to my knees. Through all the fight and stubbornness I had within me, it was gone, and I needed something else. So I come to this this meeting and where I was located, and I had a family member in recovery. And, you know, I was like, what am I going to do? Because everything else I've tried has not worked, and I can't keep drinking. I can't carry this anymore. It's too heavy. So I called him, and he said, come on down. I ended up here, and I haven't left since. You know, this is the place where I got sober, and it holds a special place in my heart. So we read this, and this is my favorite step because this is the one that I struggle with. You know, like I said, I was at odds with his will. I couldn't make sense of it. You know, it was all I had to do this for myself. I was the only person that could right the ship, even though I'd never done a good job at doing that. So I get here, and he tells me to surrender to somebody that I've always said I'm not going to do that. So I read these, and that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Well, that qualifies. You know, I'm certainly an alcoholic. I've known I'm an alcoholic. I was just never really willing to do the things necessary to combat that. It wasn't within me. You know, I knew that alcohol was going to do the thing I needed it to do. Nothing else did. I tried everything else. You know, I did the therapy, which is great if you combine it with this stuff. You know, I did the David Goggins books. I read, you know, probably, if you look at my Audible list, it's like 30 self-help books right around the time that I quit drinking. I quit drinking for about a year and a half. And guess what happened? I went back out and another new worst moment. So this qualifies. You know, I can do all these things, but at some point that unmanageability is going to rear its ugly head, and I'm going to be forced to face these things that I create when I'm drunk. So I get tired of that. I read this. And this book consistently, that's how you know you're in the right place. When you read this book that somebody wrote 80 years ago and it defines you as a person, you got the thing. So you get to this other point. There probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Well, like I said, I tried all that. I did the therapy. I read all the books. You know, I tried the self-help. I tried to be in the gym, work out, which is great if you combine it with this thing. You know, it all hinges upon your ability to work this program as you're supposed to work it. And that God could and would if he were sought. Well, that's the other thing. That's the same thing we're talking about here. I didn't believe that he would because he never did before, but I certainly needed him to. So I hope with all that I got when I get here that this is true, because the most that I can do has not been enough. I can't do this thing. I stayed sober for some amount of time, and I ended up going back out. And I don't feel, you know, I still have these, you know, everybody has hardships, but I have this tool that allows me to work through them, and I don't dwell in them. They don't encompass my whole life for a significant amount of time. So I can give these things over, you know. So what I'm saying is that my ability to work this program has afforded me a lifestyle and a personality where I smile and I'm happy. It gives me the ability to turn things over and surrender to his will and not have to do it by myself. That's all I got.
Awesome. Thank you both. Also on page 60, being convinced we are a step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. It's forever trying to change the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, passionate, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. Lynn?
Okay. Well, tell you what, you know, what really popped out at me when we were reading this, which I'd never thought of before, is that it's a normal thing, because I've shared here a couple of times before, it's a normal thing that I always want to go second. And the reason being is that if I go second, I can listen to the other person, and then I won't say anything stupid. Okay, that's my whole thinking. And so today I got here, and then everybody just assumed I was going first. And I was like, okay, Lynn, let go of it, let go of it, let go of it. And I was like, really panicking. I was like, Lynn, let go of it. I had to excuse myself and go to the bathroom. I was like, you know what, Lynn, you say stupid stuff anyway. Just let go of it. And the truth is that, you know, I just want to be in control. Whatever it is, I don't care what it is, but I just want to be in control. I have this rationalization. This is my alcoholism. This is the part that I didn't get when I got here. I thought it was about drinking. I thought it was about the fact that I was holed up in my beautiful, I had this beautiful apartment on this beautiful lagoon. I was living in Hilton Head Island. I mean, who could ask for it? I lived in this gorgeous place with this gorgeous surroundings. And I was holed up with all the drapes drawn. And I wouldn't answer my door or my phone. And I wouldn't even go to the mailbox. You know, I would just hole myself up, you know, in my apartment, you know, just drinking and smoking cigarettes and having conversations with my two cats. They were my best buds. And that was it. That's what the end of my drinking took me. And, you know, and I thought that that was the problem. If you taught me how to not drink, then I'll just suddenly become rational. I'll no longer need to control anything. And what it was, is that was my drinking is just the tip of the iceberg. I had no realization of what's underneath all of that until I stopped drinking, get through all that physical crap that I had to go through in stopping drinking, and then start to participate in life. And then once I start participating in life, I go, okay, this is the problem. This is why I drank. You know, this stuff that I have right now, I have this need to, I want to run the show. It goes against my very nature to go, okay, there's a higher power that I still haven't gotten to know yet that I'm going to turn my will and my life over to. And then I'm going to relax. And that's not what happened to me. I mean, what happened to me is I kept trying to control more things. So it was just like, okay, so my poor sponsor, I had one sponsor for the very first year of my sobriety. And then since then, I guess I wore her out. And I got another sponsor. So I've had another sponsor for the last 27 years. You know, and but I kept calling her up, and I was just like, well, you know, now what do you do with this trouble? Okay, now I'm getting evicted from my apartment. What do you do? And I had a vision, really seriously. I was 3 weeks sober, and I'm getting evicted from my apartment. And I thought, this is a problem my sponsor's never heard before. So I'm going to bring it to her, and I'm telling her about it. And I'm thinking she's going to go, well, you're going to go to the 9 o'clock meeting, and we're going to go ahead and pass the hat at the end, and we're going to pay your rent for you. You know, that's really what I thought was going to happen. I had no idea that if I just turned it over to God, that what would happen is that God would step in and solve my troubles. And I'm going to share with you, I had no idea I was going to share this, but I'll share with you what happened. At 5 days of sobriety, I went into work. I got fired from my job. So that day, I ended up calling up my sponsor because the liquor store wasn't open yet. And she instructed me to go to a meeting. at the end of the day, I'd gone to four or five meetings. In between, somewhere between that second and that third meeting, they'd give me a lead on someplace on the island that was hiring. I had a job. At the end of the day, I had gone to five meetings. I had not drank and I was employed. Okay. Did I say, thank you, God? Absolutely not. I said, you know what, Lynn, your luck is changing. But today I realized it took me a while to acknowledge all of these things. Today I realized that what was happening is that God was just in there. He was just like, okay, we go. We got someone here that needs help. I'm just going to, if you just go to your meetings and you don't drink, I'm going to take care of the logistics of your life. I am going to take care of the details. And so when I got that eviction notice, when I was 3 weeks sober, I didn't even know how I was getting paid in this new job because I didn't ask any questions. And so what had happened is I'd gone and I'd made a sale, and through a series of God coincidences, today I call them God coincidences, that what happened is that after I got that eviction notice, I went into work the very next morning. They hand me this huge check and it covers everything that was past due. And it gave me $90 to get food and groceries. And I didn't give God credit then, but I'm giving him credit today. Because that was me just going to AA and just saying, you know what, I can't do this. I'm not, you know, I'm not drinking. I'm going to AA. What else do you want? And everything got totally. Anyway, thanks for your share.
I'll read this part, and it's, you know, they put it lightly, varied traits, right? So that's most people. You know, nobody's an absolute of anything. Nobody's wholly bad or wholly good. And that's very much how I was and my alcoholism was. You know, I could be this kind, considerate, patient, generous, and self-sacrificing when I was sober and when I was young. You know, I could be egotistical, mean, and selfish, and dishonest when I was sober and when I was strong. But, you know, that's how it goes, is which qualifies more often. You know, most often whenever I'm drinking, I get these things that make me egotistical. Everybody gets cocky when they're drunk, but it, you know, it goes a little bit further sometimes. You know, the meanness, you know, you could be an anger drunk sometimes. I certainly could be, you know, and that's when that comes out. That's when these effects that I think are desired from alcoholism, for what through my alcohol, there's a negative side of that. And that you ignore that when you're an alcoholic like I am, you know. Oh, you know, that's because I drank tequila and vodka. It's not because I have the spiritual malady or what we call a spiritual malady. That's not it. It's because I didn't eat or I ate too much, or it was the jalapenos I had on my pizza. You know, it's not the truth, you know. So when I'm looking at this stuff, I can't call it what it is. I can't call it alcoholism. You know, I'm trying to control everything in my life, and there's no turning it over. There's no real direction. You know, everything's going wrong, and it's because everybody else around me is not doing their part, or I just didn't get the thing that was supposed to happen, or whatever else. It's not because I'm doing this thing that consistently burns my life to the ground, and there's no accountability. You know, there's no real direction. It's always me scrambling, trying to make something out of nothing. So this is where we're at. This is how we come in. You know, all these things happen, all these things, this, if I can just figure out how to control my drinking, if somebody could just tell me that magic thing, then everything's going to be okay. And I can go back to, like they said, controlling the lights. So whenever I say that God's my director, I have to really do that. I have to really surrender to that. And that is very difficult for a person like me. I am not patient at all. So whenever I say that I'm going to do this thing, it's kind of like I got one hand tied behind my back with my fingers crossed, right? I have to actively do that and mean it, you know, because every other circumstance that I've caused, I've found my way through. I sit here today, free man, you know, and he follows me around and I feel like he cleans up behind me, right? But he's brought me out of every situation. And if I can just be patient enough to let him do his thing, then I've always been okay. But that's not how my mind works. I am going to worry, and try to do my own thing and make the best of it and fix it myself, because I'm the one who really fixes it, right? No, that ain't true. So he constantly calls me to do something I'm not good at, which is be patient. Let it unfold. He still calls me to do that. And I'm still not good at it, but I am much better than I was when I got here. And I can see him working whenever I took credit for all that, when it wasn't really me. You know, there's things that have happened to me, things that I've magically gotten out of or found my way through that were, you know, it's like magic, right? It's not magic. Call it what you want. God's presence has always been there. I was just unwilling to acknowledge it and call it what it is. It's a higher power guided me down a path that I didn't want to see. That's all I got.
Thank you. Page 62, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. That's above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we cannot live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness, but much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help.
Well, the part that I really love about this is that this is where I acknowledge that the hardest part for me in AA was to recognize that I was selfish. Because I'm so selfish that I can't see it. And, you know, in order to, when I finally get to the point where I am starting to wave the flag and I am starting to acknowledge that I got these miracles going on in my life and I'm selfish and self-centered and I'm doing the step work. And one of the things, you know, thank God when I did the steps with the sponsor that I have today, when I did the steps with her, she sat me down. She didn't say, oh, go home and figure out what your character defects are. You know, like she didn't do that. She said, you know what? We're going to do this together. And I thought that was kind of mean and kind of controlling. But the thing is that one of the things, first thing she pointed out to me, and I would have totally missed this altogether, is she pointed out to me that one of my biggest troubles in my step work is that, you know, I constantly and have self-pity, you know, and I would have totally missed that. Like I thought, like, you know, I'm just like doing the best that I can. It's not my fault I had a crappy childhood, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I never, ever saw any of that as self-pity. And my experience has been in working step three, it's kind of like building a muscle. I have to admit what I'm asking God to take care of. I have to admit that it's a problem. And if I'm not willing to admit that I'm selfish and self-centered, then there's not, you know, I mean, how can God remove that if I'm going, no, I'm fine. I don't need any help. And the thing is that that's exactly what I'm going to get is no help. You know, and it's a humbling process, but it's like building a muscle, you know, when you're working out, you know, you have to keep pushing through it and you can't just do it once every 6 months. If you're doing it on a daily basis, it really, really helps. For me, I had a really big problem. I know we're going to get there in the reading, but I had a really big problem with some of the verbiage in the third step prayer. And the part where it says that, you know, we want to acknowledge the things, but we're not going to take credit for it. Like, I was just like, none of this doesn't make sense. And I would go around and I would read it to people and I would quiz them on it. And they would all give me whatever their vague answers were, because nobody wants to get in an argument with a crazy woman who's newly sober anyway. And but they would give me their answers and I would go, see, nobody knows the answer anyway. So this is a stupid prayer. So what I had to finally do, this was a real God moment for me, is I had to commit to just say it. You know, it's kind of like, just shut up and get in the car. You know, just say it the way that it's written. Just do that. And I had to commit to doing that. None of this stuff about I'm going to rewrite it in my own words so that it makes sense to me. I started saying that third step prayer every single day, exactly as it's written in the book. And I began to notice. And one of the things that my sponsor taught me, and I'm just sharing, this is one of my best practices, you know, it's like she kind of pointed out to me that the third step and the seventh step prayer kind of go together. And then I would like blend it in with the seventh step prayer. And that would be part of my morning meditation. But what it was is that I was identifying that I was the problem, and I was identifying that I have a problem with defiance, that I have a problem with just wanting to argue about everything, and not even so that I'm right, but it's just so that you're wrong, you know, just depending on my mood. On some days I just really need to be right. On other days, I just want you to be wrong. It doesn't make any difference. I just have fight in me. And so it was about waving the white flag and just saying, you know what, you're just going to say these prayers exactly as they're written in the book. One of the most beautiful things my sponsor did to me, and I'll share it with anybody, you know, that wants it, is she printed out to me all of the prayers in the big book, you know, and exactly as it said. And so when I need strength and sanity, I go to the strength and sanity prayer, or I go to the sick man prayer, or I go to the third step prayer, I go to the seventh step prayer. I say them all exactly as they're written, instead of readjusting them to what my beliefs were in a higher power. And the thing is that what I did believe in, and this is the truth, what I believed in is I saw Alcoholics Anonymous working in y'all's lives. So at that time, the numbers they were given, and they were saying that there's about 2.5 million sober alcoholics in the world today. So I'm going, okay, odds are if I do this the way that they're doing it, then it'll work for me too. And that's all I was willing to give. That's all I needed. That was my window of opportunity. And I got it, and I'm here today. Is that Hugo? Oh my God. Talk about window of opportunity. I'm so glad to see you here. Oh, that's awesome. Anyway, so those are my best practices. That's how I'm building the muscle. And I'm doing it on the easy stuff, and I'm doing it on the hard stuff. When I'm having good days, I'm still doing the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer. I'm still asking for help, even when I think I got it covered. Because that's really when I need the help, is when I think I got it covered. Because then my ego is definitely in charge. Mm-hmm. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks. So I've been being called selfish since I was probably 4 years old. So this is a nail on the head for me. You know, this is not something I really saw as a problem for me. You know, as I grew up and things escalated, you know, I've always, who doesn't look out for themselves and want the most for themselves? You know what I mean? That's my last brownie. You know, that's how I live my life. You know what I mean? So. Well, I get here and they tell me this is a problem. I don't know if I can do that. You know what I mean? This is something that's deeply ingrained within me. But then I realize that I look around the room and it was deeply ingrained within everyone sitting here. You know, it's something that you kind of come to terms with when you get in these rooms. There's all these rules and things they want you to start doing, these ideas that are foreign and, you know, you're pretty resistant to. And this was certainly one of them. Because like I said, this is how I ran my life. You know, if you didn't fit in, if this wasn't part of my plan, then sorry. You know, this is what I need to do. This is what needs to happen. I got to do this thing. You know, I got to make sure that my needs are met. Something funny happens when you start taking these steps, start doing these actions. You know, that word selflessness, you know, you don't really realize it because you identify as being selfish and being this alcoholic, right? Does a lot of bad stuff or at least made some mistakes. Start stacking these actions that these steps are stimulating you to do. They start accumulating. And if we are what we repeatedly do, hey, kind of on the path to being a good person, kind of on the path to being a little bit more selfless and selfish. That's the idea here. We are here for spiritual growth, get rid of the spiritual malady. That's the only thing that has made a difference in my life, is letting go of all this stuff I thought I needed and trying to latch on to what I really need. That's a higher power. We had to have God's help, says right there. I have to have it. I've tried everything. I have to have it. This is the only thing that I've left as an option, or I'm destined to drink myself to death or end up in prison, is what we say. And I believe that. That's how I end up here. I finally believed that I could end up dead or in prison. People used to say to me all the time, something bad's going to happen. Like, no way, man. I'm Superman. I am not Superman. But that's what I thought. No way. But if you continue to drink, at some point in time, God's going to hand you something you can't beat. There's going to be a circumstance that brings you to your knees. If you keep going down that path, there's only a limited amount of options. So this is what we have to do. We have to do it. It says it right there. It says it right there. We have to let go of the selfishness and the self-centeredness, or we're doomed for failure. So I may not like it when I get here, but as I sit here today, I'm pretty happy with the circumstances and the way it's brought something different out of me that has never been brought out before. You know, I hear things from people that, like, you're deeply kind. I heard that at one meeting and I was like, me? You talking to me? Looking over my shoulder, like, not me. But as we progress in this program, people see things before we see. And it's those actions that have accumulated, putting you on a path you've never been on before. It's a foreign thing that I'm incredibly grateful for. Thanks for letting me share.
Page 62 again. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of a new and triumphant art through which we would pass to freedom.
All right, it's Lynn again. You know, this part of the reading, and then some of it that follows, you know, is really, really special to me because of some of the problems that I was having that I was working with my first, with the sponsor that I have today. Her name is Michael. And she was helping me identify what the troubles were in my life. I was having many troubles, but one of my biggest troubles was that I had this pattern. I was very good at getting job interviews, and I could make a good impression, and I could get some really good jobs. But I would have this pattern. After I'd start the new job, I would do it so alcoholically. I would start there, and what I would do is I would show up to work, like, I would go, oh my God, this is the best job that I've ever had in my entire life. this is what I was made to do. I'm going to do this to the day I die. You know, I would be so excited about it. I would show up early. I would stay late. I would do things that were not asked of me to do and, you know, step on everybody else's toes. And then I would do all kinds of extra duties. I would make up things. I would be enthusiastic. You know, maybe a little bit of a brown nose. It doesn't make any difference. I mean, I was very, very excited about it. And then what would happen is it would start wearing down, you know, and I would start looking around. And I go, nobody else is working as hard as me. What's wrong with this picture? I mean, this company would shut down, you know, if I wasn't here, you know, I mean, my God, thank God I came along. And, you know, and then, you know, then more time would go on and then I'd start looking around and I'd start noticing, I go, I'm not getting any accolades for all the extra crap I do around here. You know, and the next thing you know, my good attitude has turned into, you know, a really bad attitude. And I'm not grateful. I'm not thankful for the job. I'm like thinking, I'm going, you know, I would leave tomorrow, but this place wouldn't run without me, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, I didn't see where God had anything to do with any of this or anything like that. I'm taking these troubles to my sponsor and she's pointing out to me the pattern and I'm going, so what does that mean? Does that mean like I'm not asking enough questions in the interview? You know, and I really honestly, I wanted to know. I was open to what the problem was. And I was thinking it was in the interview process. I didn't think it had anything to do with my work performance or my bad attitude. And what would happen is that my attitude would get so bad, I knew I was going to be fired, so I would quit. I would move on and find another job. And so I'm developing this pattern. And it's real. It's becoming embarrassing because I'm 2.5 years sober. And so what my sponsor outlined for me is she had me read the bottom of page 62 and the top of page 63. And it tells us that God is our employer. She said, it's absolutely none of your business what you do for a living. God's going to take care of you. Are you going to turn it over or not? You know, so she'd have me read that every single morning. And then, you know, she also does this thing called, you know, I'm not promoting it. I'm just sharing what my experience is. But, you know, we call Unity Prayer Line and we ask them to pray for me for 30 days. And they do. They put you on the prayer list. They pray for you for 30 days. And they give me an unemployment prayer. So I add in the unemployment prayer. And I did this all alcoholically, too. So they tell me to do it once a day. So I do it three times a day, three times each time. You know, so I do it like nine times a day. I'm doing it all alcoholically. And then in between, so my sponsor always tells me, she goes, well, you take an action, you know, to get out of your head and get out of your selfishness, reach out and help another alcoholic or, you know, do something to help somebody. So I'm picking up all these newcomers. I'm hauling around to meetings. I'm saying these prayers nine times a day. And I'm, you know, and I'm getting the message that God's my employer. It's none of my business what I do for a living. He's going to take care of me. Hasn't he already taken care of me? Doesn't make any difference. You try and use logic on, you know, my alcoholic thinking, it just doesn't work. And so, so I'm doing this. And what happens, this is a true story, I'm not making this up, is that I get a phone call from a girl, and I was living in Savannah, and she said, you know, is this Lynn Peter, blah, blah. And she said, you know, I was at a Chamber of Commerce meeting last night, and she said, and I was talking to somebody who handed me your resume. And I said, okay. And I'm like listening. And she said, so I'm looking for, you know, I noticed that you have some sales background and blah, you know, and so what I'm looking for is, you know, somebody that has your type of sales experience. Would you be interested in coming in for an interview? And You know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm going, God, I am such a loser. Now I got people that I had wanted to interview me for jobs I haven't even applied for. Like, that was my first line of thinking, rather than, oh my gosh, this is, you know, I'm getting an interview with something I haven't even applied for. Maybe it's coming from God. You know, maybe this is a God thing. Like, I'm not thinking that, but I go ahead and I take all the actions. I talk to my sponsor. My sponsor's convinced that it is God. And so I go to the interview and I click with this woman. She's like my best bud, you know, in the interview. Like, I really, really want this job. And then we get to the bottom part where we're discussing what the salary is. And it's $6,000 a year less than what I need to make. And I was just honest with her. I told her, I said, you know, this is what it is. I said, I'm going to have to pray about it. I'm going to have to think about it, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, because, you know, I'm going to have to supplement my income, which is, you know, so I'm thinking all of these things and I'm telling her, you know, and she really wants to offer me the job. And so I go home. In between the, right, we don't have cell phones. So in between the ride home from the interview and me getting home, that she has called and left a message on my recorder. She said, Lynn, I called my district manager. And I told him about you, and I really do want to hire you, and I understand your dilemma. I mean, you got to pay your bills. So what he advised me to do is change your job title from sales manager to director of sales and marketing. And that way, I can get you an extra $7,500 a year. Now, in what land does this come from? You know, in the land of Lynn, this kind of stuff doesn't happen. But when I'm turning my will and my life over to the care of God, this kind of stuff happens. You know, I asked God for a very specific, I said, God, be real, really, really specific with me. Let me know that I'm in the right place. And I'm thinking, I'm in the right place, you know, because all of this stuff is happening. Who does this stuff happen to? And it happened to me. And, you know, and in the meantime, I, you know, been putting in my God box for years and years and years and years. I've been putting in my God box, you know, my family, nobody was talking to my family. It's a really long story. But when I got sober, nobody in my family wanted anything to do with me. There was one person that had a restraining order. Nobody wanted anything to do with me. I thought, if I ever move it back up to Virginia, it's got to be really clear cut. So I got that in my God box, too. And so, you know, and I've really, really am honestly, I'm going through the motions of praying about this and asking for help. And then what happens is that 2.5 years into that job, I've excelled at this job. I've done really, really well. And what happened is that it was a management company for hotels. And they, you know, I brought the hotel that I was working with, it brought it to a level of profitability that they could sell it. And so it got rid of it out of their portfolio, and there's no other hotels out there in Savannah. So they said, well, what do you want to do? You want to do task force? You want to relocate? I said, I don't know. I want to stay with you guys. So I'll do task force for a while. And that meant that, you know, I had to travel, and I knew I wasn't going to work out with that. But I told him, I said, I'm open to anything in the area of Norfolk and Virginia Beach, because that's where my family is. So just in case God wants me up there, you know, is what I'm thinking. And so that job gave me, once again, they didn't have a full-time position open in Norfolk at our full-time position open. And they had two hotels that needed like kind of like a half position. So they created a new position, and then they gave me this fancy title, and they gave me this raise, and they paid for me to move up there. And I'm going, I guess God wants me to be around my family now. You know, it's like I ask God to give me specific directions, and I go through the motions, And then I stay busy with those newcomers, because if I'm not busy with those newcomers, I'm going to screw it up. Whatever God's trying to bring, I will screw it up. So I stay busy. And then God takes care of the logistics in my life. And that's been my experience. And that, I got up here to Virginia, and my family, by that time, they were ready to see me. I was ready to see them. And I could start working on the amends, the necessary amends that I needed to make there. Sorry if I talked.
That's all right.
Thanks.
Thanks for sharing. Thank you. So I read this thing, and actually, somebody pointed this out to me. This is the keystone of the new and triumphant ark that we must pass through for freedom, right? Not sobriety, nothing for freedom. That sounds pretty good. It didn't say, you know, it's the brick in the wall of freedom. It says it's the keystone. So that means it's the most important thing for me to do throughout this whole thing. The one thing, like I said, that I struggle with the most is the most important thing that I have to do. It's great. Like I said, I read this book, and it makes me mad a lot of times when I'm first reading it, because it calls me an alcoholic to my face because I fit all the descriptions, and it tells me I got to do this thing, and that's going to be really hard for me to do. And I know that, you know, as soon as I read that list, like, that's going to be hard. So so that's where we're at. You know, I have to do this thing to have the freedom. And what does the freedom mean? It means that if I want to live a quality of life where I can be happy, joyous, and free, like the book talks about, then I have to actively turn my life and my will over to God, good and bad. Good things happen, God's great. Bad things happen, give it to God. That's hard. That is difficult for me, at least, because I'm a worrier. I'm the person that's going to try to plan it out in my head before I fall asleep, so I know that everything's going to be okay. You know, I'm anxious. Not so much anymore, but I used to be for sure, because I have an inability to do this thing until I develop it. And it comes eventually. There's a lot of praying and a lot of complaining. I get there. And it starts to make sense. If I actively do this program, that freedom starts flashing, little flashes. I can see it. I can feel it. And as time progresses, comes more, brighter, a little fuller, a little longer lasting. And as soon as I stop doing this, it goes away. So that's pretty obvious for me. Proof is in the pudding, as they say. If I want to live this life, if I want to have some freedom, I have to do this thing. And I have to do it daily. And I still, guess what? I know that. I still struggle with it. It's still hard because these things are built into me. I have to actively do these things every single day and pour myself into it, because when I stop, that anxiety comes back. That freedom starts to flash. And I lose sight of why I'm really here. I just said I gave up my selfishness and my self-centeredness. So why am I here? For the newcomer. So I can carry this message. So I can be selfless. So I can show up for my family. So I can put a little bit of light into God's stream of life, right? If I can wrap my head around that, I can enjoy that freedom. Thanks for letting me share.
That's going to end the sharing portion of the meeting. Thanks both for sharing. We're going to pass the Southern Tradition desk in accordance with the Southern Tradition. You can sign up for email on our website, simpleactions.net. PayPal and Venmo handles are both in the baskets as well. The Southern Tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, finding outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Southern Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local service, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free from outside influences and might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. A word about safety: our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place For all attendees, it encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in our meetings, that our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Ben?
Visibot is for ASA conference for young people in AA. I wanted to set up a lot of my experience with doing things where they can get a place. It's going to be a really good a lot of work. It's happening at the end of the month. And I can't wait to know more about it. See, it's going to be
good. Thanks, Ben. Anyone else?
Yeah. I'm Lennon. I'm an alcoholic. And Saturday morning brunch bunch is having their 35th anniversary celebration this month, October 21st. And I put flyers over on the table over there. There's all that detail. I mean, there's ton. They carve ham and we have homemade biscuits and we got two speakers. It'll be worth coming to. It's at 9:30 on Saturday morning, October 21st.
Thanks, Lynn. Anyone else? Very good. Thank you. If you are interested in joining our home group, Simple Actions, or need a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Very cool. The literature is over here. If it's free, you can take it home for free. If it folds, you can take it home for free. I always state the obvious around here. Let's see. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. And if you're shy, you can email info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting, all are encouraged, invited to join us at the fellowship of the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Stella's off Colonial Highway, I believe.
Right? Avenue.
Highway, Avenue, Road, Street, whatever, who cares? Colonial, you guys know what I'm talking about. You're from Norfolk. Closing. Thanks to all who participated, and thanks again to the speakers. Morgan has.
Hello, I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Morgan.
Admit yourself to God as you admit your faults to Him. Clear away the wreckage of your view in the fellowship. May God bless you.
And let's close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
For the power of glory forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back and working. Work it.